Anya Rader Wallach, welcome.
Thank you.
So when you took the helm at Medicaid, there was already a really long to-do list, 30-something initiatives ready to be implemented thanks to the governor's project to, quote, reinvent Medicaid. So where did you get started?
Well, yeah, there was an ambitious agenda set out for me before I got here. So this is really the year of implementation. The most immediate was to get the Accountable Entity Program off the ground. This is a new program where groups of providers come together and are willing to take responsibility for the total costs and quality of care for populations.
So, for example, you pay a certain amount per member per month, and then they have to provide all the care a person needs for that amount?
This is sort of a baby step toward that kind of an arrangement where a provider would actually have a capped amount that they would get for taking care of the total needs of a population. What we do in order to transition towards something like that is something called shared savings, where the providers, if they save money relative to what we expected to spend, and if they at the same time either maintain or improve quality of care, then they can share in the savings that we realize.
And so much of healthcare reform, that big term we use to talk about, you know, lowering costs and improving quality, rests on coordinating care for patients, the idea being that it'll be better care and that it'll improve health. Do we know it works?
Yeah, we do. I mean, I think one of the things that we one of the threads that runs through a lot of these initiatives that we have undertaken through reinventing is expanding on the success of managed care. And we've seen that managed care in Rhode Island has been really successful, in particular for children. We're number one in the country for children's health care, and very proud of that. But often what we've done over the years is keep some of the most complex populations out of managed care, ironically. And so we've managed those either through different programs directly run by the state or not at all. So what we're trying to do is, in a very thoughtful way, expand the use of managed care to some of those more complex populations that might really benefit.
And managed care, you know, some people may be familiar with that term and some people may not. And that's basically a lot of us are in managed care. If you have health insurance through your employer, for example, or maybe you're in an HMO, if some people are a health management organization.
So we've been using that model as a way for the state to pay managed care organizations. But then underneath that, providers have not been in any kind of organized unit and have not been paid on anything other than a fee-for-service basis. So we're trying to both move more of our services into that managed care model so that everything's under the same roof, but then implement some very deliberate interventions where we work with the managed care organizations and say, for example, let's really work intensively on how we manage the services for the serious and persistently mentally ill.
And Anya Rader Wallach, much of the work of coordinating care for patients and providing better quality is really going to rest on kind of an army of case managers and primary care doctors and home health care workers and more. I'm wondering, do we have the workforce to carry this out?
That's an excellent question and something that we want to explore, again, very deliberately because, you know, if you think about how you can reduce the cost of care, you can cut your fees, you can pay for different kinds of services, substitute less expensive services for more expensive services. We've traditionally always focused on the fee part of that, and we just cut provider fees in order to save money in the program.
Right. Paying doctors less, paying hospitals less.
Yeah, that's been our main tool in cost control. What we're trying to do now is really substitute services. So either because we catch people before they get more sick, we're able to pay for something that's more preventive in nature and that costs less, or we avoid the use of hospitals, nursing homes, et cetera, and use something that's less costly that's often better for the patient.
Like home health care or managing their case a little bit more closely.
Exactly. And so the workforce question that you've raised is really central to the success of that. you have to, in the case of long-term care in particular, if you want to move people out of nursing homes, you have to have other places for them to go. And so we really have to look at how do we build that capacity. It's not going to just happen naturally. We have to have a very active role in making sure that there's the places for people to be that aren't nursing homes and the workforce to take care of them. And then if you look at the acute care side, we're looking at things like community health teams, community health workers, people who could make a big difference in terms of maintaining people's health.
And so are you investing in training, you know, workforce training programs, looking to hire more people? How are you building that workforce?
So there's a lot of work going on under our State Innovation Model grant around mental health workforce in particular.
And that's a federal grant to the state of Rhode Island to help with some healthcare reform efforts.
Exactly. So we're going to invest money through that in mental health workers and making sure that there's a good sort of primary care-based mental health workforce, which is really important. We're also investing in more community health teams through that. We are also looking at how can we work more closely with the University of Rhode Island, Rhode Island College, and Community College of Rhode Island to both assess what our workforce needs are and make sure that we have a stronger connection as the payer that's taking care of, that's covering one out of four Rhode Islanders. What can we do to make sure that the workforce is there to take care of them? And then in this year's budget, the governor has proposed an investment in home care workers in raising their wages.
And you're talking about investments in a program that everyone said was costing too much and that we needed to cut some money from. But since this effort to trim costs and boost quality in Medicaid began, some new information has come out showing that we're not actually spending as much on Medicaid as we thought, or at least costs aren't rising as fast as we thought. And I'm wondering if, you know, A, does that take away the urgency to trim so much spending? And B, have you had to change course at all when it comes to some of the initiatives you've been implementing?
No, actually, I think it shows that we've had great success from these initiatives already. We have already reduced Medicaid spending by over $100 million relative to what we would have been spending. So while you're right that compared with some trends from maybe, you know, 10, 20 years ago, Medicaid spending and healthcare spending in general is down, we still would have seen $100 million more in the state budget if not for the initiatives that we implemented this year.
$100 million more, and that's higher than the amount that was expected to be saved, which was originally $70 to $80 million.
Yes. And I should clarify that is $100 million between what was implemented through last year's budget and what we have proposed in the budget that's now in front of the General Assembly. So it's between the two.
This has been a challenge for Medicaid for a while now. The roles keep growing. The number of people who are eligible and need services continues to grow. What are you seeing for this coming year?
We do expect that we'll have some enrollment growth, and we have to stay at this to be able to continue to stay on budget and not cut benefits and not cut eligibility, which is part of what the governor pledged to do when she set out on this course.
Anya Rader Wallach, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Healthcare reporting on Rhode Island Public Radio is funded in part by a grant from the Rhode Island Foundation, Rhode Island's only community foundation.